Port of Port Town's special meeting Wednesday, July 24th for the presentation of the draft airport master plan to order.
And if I can start, commissioners, just as preamble, I'll turn it over to Randy from Reed Middleton, who's our airport engineer of record. Yeah, this has been a long process. This is a master plan update. It's not a new airport master plan. The FAA is picking up most of the cost, although, I don't know if you're going to talk about it, Randy, we don't have the FAA confirmation yet on the grant money. That's a different project, forget it. We have it for this one. We had our bid opening this afternoon. We'll tell you about that tonight, the runway project. We met with a pilot committee last week, gave them each a copy, a hard copy of the draft. And the pilots are going to get comments back to Bill by the 5th of August. And then that week, that's a Monday, Bill's going to come in and sit down with Jim and I, and we'll see what the pilots have. We've already caught a few things that, we would like changed, and Randy will do the same thing. And we'll send that back have that incorporated. Then it has to go to the FAA. Keep in mind, it's their document, paying 90% of it for their approval. And then if they're done, it'll come back again to us for commission adoption. I can't give you a firm date for all that. It'd be nice if we could get it done maybe by the end of September, time-ish, right, somewhere in there. But, so, Randy.
Okay. So, we'll have Cody on his feet here momentarily. We're a little unsure about screens. Cody works this screen. Cody, how are we doing this? Putting things out.
Will the same thing come up on this screen?
Yeah, they're both got the same thing. Just have, it needs to point to something.
Jim, I may just stand right over there.
But yeah, it might be easier. The problem is that, these flat screens, the old-fashioned
laser pointer doesn't work. It just disappears?
It disappears in the screen.
How about a stick?
Yeah.
We threw away our stick about 10 years ago and went to laser pointer. We can point with a finger.
Okay, well, I'm Randy Paul, Reed Middleton. We came on board with the port, I think about 04, 05, something like that, wasn't it? And we've done the engineering on the, most obviously, the new 7-unit hangar site right there on the south side of the museum at the airport. More recently, we've done some things that are less obvious, such as the beacon relocation.
Can you speak up a little bit for us old guys?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And like Larry's pointing out, we did open bits earlier today. Project, which is pavement rehab at the airport. In this case, pavement rehab means basically a crack repair and overall seal coat and a restriping of runway and taxiways. And the hope is, the intent is, that'll keep pavements healthy until 8 or 10 more years downstream until we get to where we believe we'll have a more significant. But what we're here for today is obviously to discuss the master plan update. And like Larry was indicating, the intent here was not to delve into entirely new territory. This is an update of the existing master plan. And we, Reed Middleton, technically are the administrative lead of this project. But really, majority of the real work is being done by Cody Russell, and Cody and his co-hosts. So Cody has obviously a PowerPoint presentation here that he'd like to put to the folks. So I think we'll give it to Cody.
Thanks, Randy. As Randy mentioned, we are really near the end of the study. This is typically on a master plan like this, we would have a series of meetings where we meet with you about individual working papers, kind of moving through the study in various what we call working papers, or incremental work products that you have a chance to look at. And as Jim mentioned and Larry mentioned, this is this being a master plan update, we were really able to utilize a lot of information from previous master plan. We really just focused in on the items that had changed, updated some of the key areas of the document in updating, and focused on the new set of projects related to the master plan itself. Jim, go through there. We're going to run through just basically highlight some of the information from the draft report itself, and really want to keep this informal. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to let me know, and we can stop at any time. But essentially, Jim, this is essentially the planning process that we go through for a master plan. These individual bullet items essentially are the representation of the chapters document itself. And it's because we were using some of the information from the previous plan, we didn't feel not all of the chapters had a lot of new work that was part of that process. But these are the main chapters. The inventory, of course, is the basis of the document, the existing conditions of the existing facility itself. The forecasting, that was one where we essentially updated your baseline data for the master plan update. Forecasting that was done in the previous plan was considered valid by the FAA. So we basically updated the baseline and projected, interpolated the projections forward through the new base year data. So there was not a lot of new forecasting completed. The facility requirements is where we basically take the operational forecast, based aircraft forecast, and convert those to facilities. Look at the requirements for each, both the air side of the airport, the land side, and determine what those needs are based upon the forecasted activity. The next step in the facility requirements is the alternatives. There's a couple of chapters in here that are fairly, quite a bit of information in them. There was a lot of work associated with really one of the primary objectives of this plan was to evaluate your airport from the standpoint of what its needs are as far as growing in the future. And right now, we'll go into some details, but you're essentially, as far as the FAA is concerned, you're a small aircraft or primarily cater to the smaller aircraft types and operations by those aircraft. But you are beginning to get increasing operations by some of the larger general aviation aircraft. And the FAA's interest in that is that there's separate criteria for when you take that step from a small aircraft airport to a, what they consider a large aircraft, and as far as the design standards go. And that's a lot of times there's growing pains that happen, and when you take that step, depending upon the constraints of the existing facility, some of those projects that you have to do can be fairly substantial. And it just really depends on the exact situation. That's really what we did in the alternatives chapter, is look at that requirements that would be required to take that next step up with respect to the design standard. And so there's a very comprehensive look at that process that we went through. The future instrumentation of the airport, instrument approach capabilities, is also built into that analysis. And that has a key influence on the design standard as well, is what the minimums of the approach could be, what the capabilities of the airport are for the approach. So that's another factor that's built into that process. The plans chapter is essentially a representation of sort of what the recommended plan is. There is some large drawings, basically what we call an airport layout plan drawing set. Is one of the end products of that, basically reflects all of the recommended improvements. There are detailed sheets for airspace, the approaches, the detailed drawings for the individual area plans. There are property maps. So all of those pieces represent that drawing set itself, and that's one of the important end products of the plan. This is one of the documents that would be signed off by the FAA. In the board, and when you go through that approval process, this will be one of the documents that you're actually doing. The implementation. implementation chapter is basically where we identify the projects and the phasing of those projects. That's also, from a planning standpoint, for us to have an understanding of prioritization of the projects that you've identified. We have cost estimates that are developed. Randy's folks prepare the cost estimates. And that's one of the items that we really want to spend a little time with this afternoon as well, is looking at some of the specific projects and getting some feedback on how you feel those should be prioritized and so forth. One thing you need to keep in mind about a master plan like this is a 20-year plan. So this is a fairly long-range planning effort for in the FAA as far as looking at the future of the airport going forward. And particularly when we're talking about the projects, we break it into phases. There's 0 to 5 years, 5 to 11 years, and 10 to 20 years. And so when we're talking about those projects, we need to keep in mind that we're really talking about a fairly long-term period. And it's really our best guess and educated guess as to what those projects should be at this time. And you'll have an opportunity each year with the state when you submit your CIP listing of projects. You get a chance to reprioritize those each year. And that's an important step that the board will go through each year to update that list, to get those in the right order that they need to be based on the new information that you have. So we can go ahead and skip through that. This is the project discussion that we'll have, and we'll focus a little on that. This is the diagram of the existing airport layout. This should just kind of help you get oriented. North is up on this drawing. Again, this is the runway, the runway 927. It's essentially an east-west runway. Most of the general aviation facilities, essentially all of the facilities, are on the north side of the airport. We have a fully parallel taxiway system. The red items on the drawing are the existing buildings and hangars located. Paving color, you can see whether the runway or the taxiways and how those fit together to the airfield. The other important thing about the airport to understand is how it's basically fit between the two highways. You have Highway 20, Highway 19, really set the boundaries east and west for the facility. And really sort of establishes some boundaries that you need to work with as far as how long the runway can be. And it's sort of, there's some physical constraints about that aspect that really will prevent you from extending the runway in the future. And that's just something that we have to live with and understand. This boulder line is your airport property line. It goes around the property. You can see how it crosses over the highways. So you have approach protection areas off each end of the runway.
You zoom back up.
And so you can see on either side of the highway, we have property that we own. And this is a very important area with respect to the airport itself, is those approach areas and being able to protect those from encroachment, land use.
And this down here is that 24-acre industrial land that we've rezoned.
Can I ask a question while you're talking about that topic? You say protected from encroachment and land use. That can still be used for things like agriculture, couldn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
A lot of, and what we'll show too, we've got some other slides. A lot of times the land itself sort of dictates what you're mm-hmm. using for. You've got a lot of wetlands. In your
I was going to say, it's probably at least 60% wetlands over there. And it would be very difficult to, there's not enough acreage there. Right. Without, being the buffer and everything else. Exactly. Although we have, in previous years, allowed a farmer to hay this whole area here, along Highway 19. He hasn't wanted to do that the last few years, but it's not real high quality hay, but he's done it.
And there's a lot of facilities that do have a lot of property, excess property, that within what we call sort of these aeronautically controlled areas where you really can't put buildings, and it's another revenue source for Air Force sponsors to be able to tap into. You've got some restrictions that are also built in from just because of the wetlands primarily. got a map here just to kind of give you a relationship of, this is an existing zoning map, and it reflects the current zoning that's in existence in and around the airport itself. It also reflects the overlay zoning that you have in place, type 1 and type 2 zones, basically an effort to sort of identify these areas as proximity of the airport, the existence of the airport. And certainly there's a lot of land use compatibility issues associated with airports and non-compatible land uses, and that's always important to recognize that and understand those uses.
And just a little history, because it was done by a previous commission, there's probably about a three-year process with public meetings, working with the county, neighbors in the vicinity of the airport, etc. And we managed to get the county to adopt this map formally. And it's on the county website as well as our website. And I briefed the Realtors Association about this at the time, so that should somebody come in and buy property, they know full disclosure that, hey, you're in the vicinity of an airport, here's the decibel readings in different vicinities, here's the flight pattern, et cetera. So that was a lot of work.
Yeah, that's quite an achievement to be able to get that finally accomplished.
Most counties won't do that.
Right.
In cities.
There's usually a lot of pushback from adjacent jurisdictions. The fact that you were able to get that done is quite impressive, and it's not that common.
I got to tell you, in the hierarchy of airports, we're just a sleepy little quiet airport on the decibel level. The DNL of the day night
right.
levels.
And since we have our limited runway length, we'll likely never get to be a very big commercial, and so we're probably going to stay that way just because.
You'll hear from citizens that they just know we're going to start landing heavy jets out there, and tell them we can do that one time and never taking off again. But, and you'll see in there, we've looked at 200 foot extension on the west towards Highway 20. And that's the only end where there's enough still safety zone from the highway. So that would be the most we could do, and that would be a very expensive extension given the wetland.
Here's the forecast. I have this slide just to sort of highlight some of the different specific forecast categories that we often look at in the master plan, and these were relevant to your airport as well. We always start with historical review and look at historic operations. The previous master plan did that. We updated that to the base year data. But really, essentially, GA is what's going on at Fort Townsend, and that was the focus of what we looked at in the base area. So general aviation operations and based aircraft were the drivers as far as the project went.
Was Life Flight and that kind of emergency evac sort of?
Yes, they fall into the air taxi category, so we have an accounting of those as well. And that's I'm glad you mentioned that. That's an important function and feature of having a strip like you have and its proximity to your community is having that capability for medevac flights and evacuations. And that's one of those things that a lot of the communities, they don't ever they don't recognize and fully appreciate that they need some. So you are set up for that, and that's an important function that plays for the community. This is a summary of kind of the forecast summary table. This kind of gives you a feel for some of the operational counts that we had. We were looking at 2010 base year. You can see how the general aviation operations, if you move from columns left to right in five-year increments, it illustrates the growth that's anticipated or that was projected for the previous master plan. We went ahead just last week, went into the terminal area forecast document that FAA retains, maintains for all of the airports. They actually have your 2030 year, out year, it's just over 104,000 operations. So they're still anticipating that growth occurring at your airport. And this basically reflects that continued growth in operations. This is about 2.8% per year is what they project. And certainly in the last 5 years, that's certainly been a very aggressive number to basically obtain during these economic conditions that we're in. There is a lot of demand for activity over here, and I think that's a good representation of what could be expected to happen in operational activity. This gives a breakdown by the aircraft types within the GA category itself. And then there's also the based aircraft numbers that are identified. We had 107 aircraft identified. We started the project. I think you're probably around that same number now. You might have a better idea of that. The TAP did recognize they were, I think this was projecting about 188 aircraft in a 20-year time frame. The TAP was now showing a growth of about 40 aircraft for that period. So they backed off a little bit on their based aircraft projections. Again, there's a lot of economic reasons for having done that. And really all that means, as far as you're concerned, is as far as hangars go, you're going to only be building new hangars when you have specific tenants needed and requirements for those, basically demand-driven type of development. You're not going to be going out and building hangars just because we said 2015 you needed 20 more hangars than you had. So keep that in mind. That really applies to a lot of the projects in the plan itself. They're really based upon demand and true need. There's not a lot of speculative building or projections that are done for as far as construction goes. So that's important.
Cody, what qualifies for military? And I asked the question because a lot of pilots tell me that 30 a month is more appropriate.
Yeah, it tends to vary. I mean, it could be fixed wing or it could be helicopters. We seem to see it in this part of the country. We see a mixture of those, and that can vary from year to year because of mission changes, training.
I think what we see visually, a lot of them aren't necessarily formal, like we're doing the formal refueling operation tonight and tomorrow night. But there's a lot of military and Coast Guard that sat down just to have a piece of pie and then fly on back to the base. So is that an official military operation, or, you know, it's almost like a recreational plane, military plane.
There's a lot of variance in that, and it changes constantly. It's hard to nail that down.
Now where was the life flight, Airbus Northwest, where's that captured?
It would be captured in this air taxi category. That reflects primarily those type of operations, any kind of light cargo activity or charter activity that you have fall into that.
So that seems to be a growing, as our demographics are aging here.
Right.
You know, our local hospital, they're trying to get more services equipped to medevac this year.
That's
on the air taxi numbers, I see it's 1,500. I look back even several years before that, it was 1,500 every year. Is that just a guess then?
It is pretty much a guess. In the FAA, that's the number that they've plugged into that, and it's not a hard fastness. A lot of these numbers, particularly at a non-towered airport, are going to be best guesses what that activity is.
Will those, do they capture empirical data? So if there's more flights filed on an IFR flight plan, they start to capture that, as well as the kind of the WAGs?
That would be one of the indicators, and that's one of the things that we looked at, is we'll go to those what we call ASDI data, but it's basically those flight plan records of those flights. looked at those for specific aircraft type, and we can kind of see trends and usage that way, and it gives us an idea of what the fleet mix kind of trending, things like that. So that's another source that it doesn't capture everything. You know, periodically, some airports will put out acoustical counters, and that's a way that they sort of supplement, you know, three or four times a month, they can get a record at different times of the year, get a flavor for what the activity is. And I don't know if you guys have had any counters recently.
We get the space counter every now and then. You know, they'll have like a couple of them.
Right, everyone's got a share.
Right.
That's kind of where those guesses come from, some of that. Now, this is the facility requirements, and this sort of gives you some of the categories, different items to look at when we address that chapter in the master plan itself. We have it broken down by airside and landside. Airside is fairly obvious. It's the airfield itself, layout, configuration of runways and taxiways. Runway length is typically an item of interest. The instrumentation, the approach capabilities of the runway, fall under that airside category. The land side, primarily the general aviation development areas, the supporting taxiway system to and from the hangar areas. Utilities fall under that, support facilities, fueling operations, fire protection for the airport, it falls under the land side category. So that kind of gives you an idea of some of the specific items that we do look at. Runway length, Larry mentioned that the previous plan had illustrated a 200-foot extension on the runway 9, the west end of the runway, and that was about all the space that you had available to accommodate any lengthening of the runway itself. And as we work through that, this table reflects an advisory circular that the FAA has for evaluating runway length. And you're basically in these first two categories under the small aircraft category. It breaks it down by two different fleet characteristics, 95% of the fleet, 100% of the fleet, and small aircraft more than 10 seats. And you can kind of see how you fit within those categories. Basically, you're in between the 95 and the 100% of the fleet with your existing 3,000 feet of runway. And so really, you know, if there was a specific aircraft or a specific operational need for an additional couple hundred feet, and sometimes we see that where there's a really need that for whatever reason, then I think we'd have been a little bit more focused on maybe trying to make that work, at least from a planning standpoint. But the ground is available out there, and you could always come back to it if you needed to. It really was going to... It was going to get into the wetlands that were located in that area, and it would, I think Larry was joking about being expensive, but it would be very expensive, 200 feet of pavement to accomplish at the airport. And we just didn't see the justification today for the need. So basically, you're set pretty well for the type of aircraft that you accommodate, 3,000 feet. I know that you can't see this very well, but I wanted to include this just to kind of give you an idea of some of the process that we went through. This is dimensional standards table, and this comes from the advisory circular that FAA has for dimensional criteria. And what this tells us is basically when we evaluate this, we look at the existing airport, and that's this first column. These are the lengths and widths and dimensions of the various categories of standards that the FAA has. And we compare those to the small aircraft standards the airport currently operates to, which is this next column. The next two columns are what we call those next steps in growth, expansion that we see. And those would be triggered by additional operations by the larger general aviation fleet. And you're based on historic numbers and some of the forecasts that we looked at, we are anticipating you having operations that are going to require either of these columns potentially in the future within that 20-year window. So what that requires us to do is to basically evaluate your existing facility to what it would take to accommodate that next step in design standards. And that was an important exercise of this update, was to see how that would work, what it would take to accommodate that. And so that was kind of a focus area of the study. We've got some drawings next, Jim, kind of reflect some of that. Basically, just to preface this drawing, as far as existing facilities go, you meet all of the criteria for the small aircraft. So there's really nothing that you need to do dimensionally to the facility to better accommodate the standards. When you take that next step, this is the first step. This is going to what they call Airport Reference Code B1. B stands for approach category. It's the speed that the aircraft approaches. The Roman numeral 1 is based upon wingspan, and that's up to 49 feet for group 1. This gives you an idea. Essentially, all you have to do are move some hole lines where your pole positions on your connector taxiways to take that next step up to meet that B1 large aircraft standard. So fairly minor changes would have to be made to address it. Next one is what we call the B. Go to the other way. There we go. This is that neck that was that farthest column of criteria that we were looking at. And you can see from the red labels here, it's a fairly dramatic step up dimensionally for the airport to take. What's important to know is really you have space to achieve most of the criteria that you'd be required to come. The safety areas of the runway, the object free areas, you have the space surrounding those runway pavement itself. You just need to move the boundaries out to be able to accommodate that increased dimension of safety here. The one critical dimension that is important to know is the runway taxiway separation. And you are basically at 220 now. It's going to be 240 in the future condition. So there's a 15-foot difference in the runway taxiway separation. And that reflects a project that you would need to be able to do in order to meet that standard if you need to move into this category.
And what category is that?
This is Airport Reference Code B2.
This is B2, okay. Mm-hmm.
What would be the typical aircraft of this? King Air?
King Air would be a good representation. And so there are, it's fairly some of the small business jets and some of the larger turboprop aircraft would fall into that category. And really what this also tells us is that and this also, we'll talk a little bit about this when we get to the projects, which is Randy mentioned. You're doing a project, is it next year, Randy, the fog seal?
This year.
Potentially. So you're doing a kind of a stopgap project to extend the life of your pavement this year. Ultimately, you're going to need to reconstruct the runway. And at that time, whether that's 10 years out, you may want to consider what that means relative to this runway taxiway separation.
Oh, yeah, these vibrators.
So that's just one of the things to kind of keep in the back of the mind. The master plan will make note of that and include that as a project consideration for the future. And also that, again, that's going to be driven by the operational activity of those larger aircraft. Those operations don't occur, then you basically are just going to delay or postpone this design change until that time comes.
Now, Cody, we accommodate King Airs and Citations right now. Is that just on an incidental basis, or?
It is. And operationally, the way the FAA looks at that is when you reach they call it substantial use threshold, 500 operations is sort of the magic number that you would have. And that could be by a specific single aircraft, or it could be a family of aircraft, King Air and Group 2 Citation. Basically, you look at operations by all of those Group 2 aircraft, and even the assess the citation falls in that category. So
what was the threshold again?
500 operations.
I haven't seen it lately, but we had a citation that weekly. Pick up a gentleman flying down to California for work and flying back on Friday.
And yesterday.
Yes, they're still doing it. Yeah. They would normally come in light on fuel and
right.
I tell you, the only use is half the runway taken off. But it's nothing to go.
And that's the kind of thing that we were able to capture when we looked at that data. We talked about radar data. We're able to pick up some of those operations and get a feel for the counts. And we had about, I think I looked at the table, but 200 to 300 of those operations is what we were reporting at annually.
Are you talking about VFR operations, IFR operations? It seems to me you probably need more runway to bring a citation in there, IFR. I don't know your category, B2, are you talking IFR?
Well, since we, up to this day, we don't have any approaches, so it would be all VFR visual approaches.
Those guys are all on IFR flight plan because they're over 18,000 feet, they're over 200 knots. So they're all on.
They're not flying instrument meteorologically.
Yeah, I know that. That's what I'm saying. I watched the citation just come in there. Like I said, they really have to set it right down on the number.
Right.
If they were to come in IFR at night, they wouldn't really be able to do that. They would have to land and get 1,000 feet right. Further down the runway. So my question is, are you planning to, if you do have an IFR approach system, that's supposed to be able to handle assessing citations in King Air?
Well, it's not going to handle them real well.
The minimums are so high now that you know they'll have the airport environment in view practically at VFR minimums now. All the IFR approach is really doing is getting them under the layer.
So they won't be able to cut it straight in. Just happy.
Well, yeah, they will. By the time they get to their.
Okay, this is the approach slide that I wanted to talk a little bit about. I checked the flight procedures website this week, and according to there, basically that GPS circling approach procedure is scheduled for August 22nd. Is that what you guys, latest y'all heard? And essentially, this is going to give you it's not a straight-in approach, but it's a circling approach, give you something by August. And we're really looking at that as kind of the first step in this process. I know that y'all, Jim and Randy's been involved with some of the obstruction evaluation. There was a obstruction survey that was done a couple of years ago that basically went out. The FAA has to do a full, what they call an 18B survey to pick up all of the potential obstructions in the vicinity of the airport. And you have a lot of trees.
And they're growing.
And they're so growing.
And particularly, and even on the east end, 27 end, you've got some rising terrain there that's a functional factor as well. But and you've got a lot of big trees, and you'd be amazed at what the survey looked like. There's just hundreds of points.
We showed the commissioners that the map that came
from that. So you've got
I remember two trees.
Well, there's a lot of high trees. There was a couple to the west that penetrated the
right.
surface.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had one up on Prospect on the east end penetrated.
But the survey, which was an aerial photograph, looked at 100 points, at least 100 points, maybe a couple hundred points, of potential hazards growing.
And so that's what I'd like to mention about that is basically FAA is, I think they've done a great job to get you this first step in this certain approach. And it's, they really had to work departure procedures really hard to make that work. And so was, I think they did a good job there. But from a planning standpoint, we're really hopeful that sometime down the road, you're going to have a straight-in procedure to runway 9. And we don't know all the details of that. We certainly think the minimums are going to be a little bit better than the certain minimums, obviously. And you're going to have to address some of those obstructions to be able to accommodate that. And part of the problem is it's nice if the trees happen to be on airport property, but a lot of times they're not. And you've got to basically identify where they are. And what happens in a survey like this that was done, the survey points that we have, pick the highest tree at this location within a 500-foot radius, but there were 50 other trees all around it, equally as tall. And so when it comes time to look at the specific trees, a lot of times you're looking at a grouping of trees, and you're talking about off-airport, and there's an environmental process that you have to go through, look at that, evaluate that. It can be time-consuming, pretty challenging, depending on how severe, how many there are. So that's just a process that you'll have to go through.
Well, we think some of the highest trees to the west are on our finance director's mother's property.
That's right. So, is that good?
So either it's going to cost us an awful lot, or it'll be really expensive.
Sometimes you can get lucky like that.
Right.
While we're on this, could you tell me or describe to us guys that aren't really pilots the difference between the circling approach and the straight approach?
This gentleman can probably tell you better than I, but
okay.
Essentially a circling approach is gets you in the vicinity of the airport, and then basically it's a visual approach, technically speaking.
Okay, so GPS just gets you here, but the other one, the GPS actually lands you.
Well, yes, and this will land you too, but the straight-in approach, this is the kind of approach that you really want, is a straight-in approach, and it's going to have better minimums, and I mean, we typically, Bill, you want to add to that?
Your circling approach is essentially, it gets you in the vicinity of the airport and underneath cloud layer, and then the pilot's responsible to, he's in an environment then with VFR aircraft, because the minimums are not much higher than, or lower than VFR minimums. I think the other thing about this first approach is that it's day only, if I read the documents correctly.
I haven't heard
there was
that.
Some note about there not being a lighting, and it might have been the pappies. So that's been corrected, so that maybe that restriction will take them. The GPS LPV, which is with vertical guidance, that'll get you on the center line of the airport runway, and without any other auxiliary information, the GPS will get you down on a specified glide slope.
It's more precise.
But my understanding is that the FAA requires a 3,200 foot or longer runway to consider an LPV. So,
yeah, and there's a little wiggle room in there on that.
The only problem with runway 9 straight in approach, you're coming out of the west land or east, quite often our prevailing winds are just the opposite. So you'd be landing with the wind instead of into the wind.
Well, and the other thing is that now the no wind preferred runway is 27. So if you've got VFR traffic operating under, you know, the typical sort of low overcast is generally not very windy. If you've got this no wind VFR traffic landing on 27, and you've got IFR traffic approaching on 9, you've created a conflict for yourself. Probably at some point you get addressed.
And really, it was the terrain and the trees on the east were really the factors there. And that was, would have been the preferred end to be able to have a procedure. Wind coverage.
Seaton's house kind of screws this all up. The hill right off Prospect where Bruce Seaton's house is, we'd have to remove half that hillside straight to 270.
What'll happen?
Do it if we contract with him to do it.
What'll happen is if the wind favors 270, what'll happen is that the circling approach will bring you in from the northwest along that approach, and then once you're down to a altitude that you can actually see the runway environment, then they'll essentially make that circuit downwind and on to 270. So they won't complete the landing on 9, even though it's an approach to 9. It's a circling approach.
That's a good point.
Do you know if the Class A airspace will change 700 feet?
There is no Class E now at our airport, but there will be.
I always thought there was Class A airspace.
I think there is. So it may
it's
change.
Because if you look at the chart, this whole area is in Class A airspace, so that means you can't go over 700 feet. The ceiling is at 700 feet now, so my question would be, if you put in a GPS approach, will they lower that to the surface like Port Angeles, or would it stay the same?
I don't know if the circling procedure will do that or not. The straight in
would it down.
That would be a handicap.
Yeah, I think now all you have to do is within the vicinity of the airport, be clear of clouds and have your minimum visibility and ceiling. And I think that this will, even the circling approach, will implement a situation in which you'll have to have spacing clouds. So essentially the VFR ceiling minimum will go up by whatever that distance is from cloud base.
So right now, do you have to stay 500 feet below?
You have to stay 500 feet below, and you have to stay so many quarters of a mile horizontally, and whatever your minimum visibility is. But right now you don't have that. Right now you just have to stay clear of clouds in the airport environment.
Okay, so clear of clouds means the VFR cloud could be at 700 feet, right? On the IFR cloud coming out of the clouds at 890.
Yeah, it could encourage people to use unit on.
I was under the impression that the FAA would lower that if we got an AWOS system.
That's our understanding.
So that's still in the equation. If we should go AWOS, we might get better.
That's my understanding. That's one of the projects that we identified is the AWOS. I know you guys have been talking about that a bit. This is a drawing. Basically, once we go through the alternatives, facility requirements, we'll get to a point where we call sort of the conceptual development plan. What this identifies is sort of kind of basically makes a selection of kind of what we think the airside and landside improvements are going to be. This makes a selection for the design category of the runway system. It also identifies any of the pavement, runway taxiway improvements. It also makes an attempt to basically look at the property around the airfield and consider how it's going to be developed in the future. I think this is a good map to sort of kind of give you a feel, even though you have quite a bit of property that's undeveloped surrounding airport property itself. A lot of that, if you look at this yellow area, is what we term as development sensitive. So, or it's in an area that needs to be protected for the operational ends of the runway. And primarily this is dictated by the wetlands that are located on the airport. So it really does eat a lot of property up for that category. identify what we've identified as the future aviation development areas and expansion areas. And you can see it, as far as the piece of the pie, that's a fairly small percentage of the area that's, that truly is available to you for expansion. And that kind of gives you an idea of kind of how that's allocated across the property.
You have some, it appears to be hangar development on the south side of the runway?
Yes.
That has access to the runway?
Yes, it would have to have its own taxiway system constructed to support that. Really, in the initial years, you've got some properties basically are set up to be developed already. You've got lots basically in place. They just need structures to be added, buildings built to accommodate. So a lot of the demand through this particular 20-year planning period is going to be accommodated, could be accommodated within the existing areas that you have on the north side. This would be an area to consider. We were talking about that Group 2 standard increase. Some of the larger general aviation aircraft, some of the larger hangars, this would be an area to consider to develop this to accommodate that larger design group aircraft.
How would you facilitate access to that area?
Vehicular?
Yeah.
We're using this
identified industrial park.
Oh, okay.
Along the edge of the industrial park, it would have its own access road.
Now, the FAA has told us many times over the years that they would not consider development of hangars on the south side until we finish the north side build out. So, you know, it's in our original master plan, it's in the update, but
right.
Yeah, you're probably looking at a decade or more.
Exactly.
Forward.
But there's a lot of infrastructure that you would have to build to accommodate even the first hangar. So that's, there's a, from that standpoint, it would take a pretty big project over here to make all that happen.
One good thing, since we do have the light industrial park, we'll have fire flow, et cetera, infrastructure, so, and power, so we could extend from that into the new hangar area.
Right. The utility access will be good.
Now, when you say, this was a question I had when I went through the draft last week, aviation related and aviation compatible, which we see several times, that means it could be non-aviation related, as long as it meets the FAA rules of no light, flare, smoke.
That's correct. And that's a terminology that we use that the FAA likes. And this is a real touchy subject with the FAA, too. I'm sure that you've had experiences with them on that as well. Their focus is aviation, and they really, in their mind, if this property over here or up here is not cannot be served with airside access, they consider that surplus property. And at times, every situation is a little bit different.
However, you know, any revenues generated from that will stay at the airport.
Right.
So the long-term health of the airport.
Right. And that's really the carrot that you have, is to be able to make that argument. And we've had success and failures at different places saying that same thing. And every airport's a little bit different, and the situations are different. That's just something we have to deal with. I think a lot of, particularly this area, you've got improvement to do what you wanted to do there, and that's a good thing to be able to structure that way.
So even though the FAA likes the idea of that being aviation related, businesses, they don't like the idea of holding this.
Exactly.
Don't like the idea of what?
Oh, that there's a hole in the fence to the airport fence. Operations area.
Oh, through the fence.
And the FAA is for housing developments and business developments and all these sort of things. They've been less and less excited about that.
They have very strict rules about the way that the sponsors collect revenue that's generated on airport property. It needs to all stay on airport, stay in coffers. And there are places around the country that have had little tracts of property that were sort of outside the property line of the airport. come in and build a hangar on their private property, want to punch a little connector taxiway to the airfield and have their own private airport access point. That's really frowned upon. The FAA, and it's really not allowed anymore to do that.
But if we were to put a commercial agricultural thing on the Eagles Industrial Park, but the revenue stays with the airport, then they shouldn't have any problem with that, should they?
They shouldn't. And I think that the terms that were the way that this was brought in, the property lines were changed. This property became part of the airport, mm-hmm. and the property swap that occurred to make that happen. They were really sort of on board with what you were doing from the get go, so you shouldn't have any problems.
You can have another laundry list of things when you're building that you really still have to obey. You know, height of buildings, again, you can't have something that's going to create a lot of light that might confuse the pilot.
Can't have a great silo. They do have lots of rules.
Before we leave this slide, you mentioned that part with the new infrastructure on the south side of the airport would be something you put in for the grade two. Well, since that's not going to be done until the upper part's built out, is there anything that's going to stop grade two aircraft and not get name or cheap stuff and going in the other little hangars at the top? They're not going to be too physically small for those kinds of things, are they?
Well,
they won't fit.
That's a good point. A lot of these taxi lanes are set up for the smaller wingspan aircraft.
Right.
And it depends where they are, but really this is designed for that smaller aircraft category.
So in other words, if we had somebody that wanted a grade two, I mean, they'd have to have a good off. We'd have to have to put that infrastructure in at the bottom.
You might, or there may be a spot out here that you could accommodate them. What we'll show on the plan is we still need to be able to accommodate access to those Group 2 planes on this connected taxi system to the DFBO area, the fueling area. They still need to be able to migrate to and from this area. So there would be opportunities. We're going to have to widen some of these connected taxiways to accommodate those planes anyway. And there would be logically opportunities to maybe put some of these larger hangars in some of these spots.
But one hangar there just north of the segmented circle probably could be conformed into it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's a candidate side. There's some workarounds that I think you have in place to be able to do that. So what that drawing, as I mentioned, that was a conceptual development plan. This is what we call the airport layout plan. And that's where we take all of the items that we've identified and selected. And this sort of becomes the official drawing for all of those features being identified. This has all of the FAA has lots of data blocks and standards blocks that they have to have filled out correctly. It tells all of the information about the airport itself, procedures, all of the paving, the string, everything about the airport is conveyed in some form of information on this drawing. So this becomes that official drawing that we talked about that we approved by both the board and the FAA.
You notice the light industrial park is laid out with the potential parcels too.
Yeah. It
kind of shows conceptually laid out and how those access, all the access roads that function or and all of the proposals. The other thing to keep in mind about the airport layout plan too, is we're talking about some of these projects at the moment. As we mentioned, this is a 20-year plan. Everything that you conceivably think you would want to do at the airport over the next 20 years, you want to be reflected on this drawing. You can't go to the FAA next year and say, well, I've got this idea about doing something over here or something over here. It really needs to be identified and either in an area or conceptual layout can be done or a designated area can be identified. Anything that might be a project, really need to have it on your airport layout plan or have it considered. So that's just an important thing to keep in mind as we talk about some of the projects.
Can I go back for you?
Here we go. Jump on it. in addition to that airport layout plan, there are these what we call these detailed drawing areas. We call them terminal area plans or hangar development area plans. What this shows you is a little bit greater detail of some of the projects that are identified on that airport layout plan. This is the existing GA development area on the north side of the runway. This shows us, we talked about those taxiway improvements that need to be made. This is that shifting of the parallel taxiway system be required to take that next step in design standards. This is the widening of some of these connector taxiways to feed the general aviation ramp area. Red buildings are the future buildings that are identified for hangars and aircraft storage. So that kind of gives you just basically a little bit more of a detailed drawing of that area. We were to mention the AWOS. This is where the site was identified, this grassed area for the is it AWOS or ASOS?
AWOS.
So this would be your new weather station. It gets constructed. This is the site that was identified on the episode. Next one. This is the south side. Again, shows that future larger GA development area, the south side of the airport. Airfield paving that would have to be designed, constructed to accommodate that, as well as the hangars themselves, the access parking to and from the facility. We've got one more. Okay, projects and cost. What I'd like to start with is just sort of give you the big picture numbers and kind of show you how those are broken down by phases. Again, we talked about three phases, first five years, second five, and third 10 years. This is the total cost and the total projects identified for each of those phases going forward. These are the breakdown of those costs for federal and local for each of those phases. As you can see, the federal is picks up the lion's share of cost based upon the funding distribution, 90-10 split on the funding for the what they call the airport improvement program projects that are eligible for federal funding. Not all of the projects are, and depending on the projects themselves, we'll talk about that a little bit. That kind of gives you kind of a feel for the money that's involved is identified so far with the projects. When we look at the local share, we typically break that down by the airport sponsor, which in your case, you being the port, would be the sponsor in this case. You can see how your share of those projects break down by each of the phases. You'll notice we have a third phase out here, what we title private revenue generating. Typically, the hangars in an airport are constructed with private funds. There are some cases where the sponsor would be choose to be the developer in aircraft hangar facility or storage facilities. Typically, that's not the case. And we had identified basically phase three, where the majority of that hangar work would be phase three and would be under the private category. So I don't have any plans to be in the hangar business.
We like our condo type leases, just rent the land right off the building.
And that's the typical way that it's set up. So that's kind of how that local breakdown is tallied. There's a phasing plan in this last chapter as well, and this is where we take those. There's a listing of the projects. They're color-coded by phases. Phase 1, 2, and 3, and individual projects are identified. This kind of gives you an idea so you can kind of see where the projects are located and by the description of the project, really what's involved with that particular project. So just more of a graphic representation of the project listings themselves. Kind of give you an idea how those are distributed and allocated. The next slide is we've got some tables. And again, these are kind of hard to read on here, but I would encourage you. I've got a page number that's listed in the documents that you'll have access to. This is the first 5 years of projects that we've identified. This is typically the area of most focus for evaluation. These are the near-term projects that we know the most about. We have the best information on what we think those needs are for that first five-year period. And we have these allocated by years during that period. This kind of gives you an idea of how we've broken those down based upon the draft report information that we have. We would expect to get some feedback from the pilots group and you folks as well in the prioritization of these. And as I mentioned early on, every year you have a chance to revisit this listing and with the state and with the FAA. And you can have next year, you can have a new number one project that you're really focused in on based upon what's happening next year. And that's a nice thing about the document itself is it kind of gives you an idea of what we think we need and then how we massage and move these around and prioritize those. That's an annual effort that you'll be going through each year with the FAA.
And remember on the funding, there is a thought on this chart, we're just dealing with the FAA, there is state funding. Now, it's been pretty scarce the last couple of years because of the state financial condition. But in previous years, back in mid 2005, 2006 area, they had some pretty good money for things like tree removal and that sort of thing. So maybe as the economy recovers, maybe something available.
That's something to keep in mind, too. That's a good point, Larry. Is that we typically don't show that state because of its fluctuation and just it's hard to nail down, but there are specific projects that they would be interested in. Typically, obstruction removal is one of those. It's seen as a safety issue. FAA is very focused on that as well. But there would be some opportunities to get some help in some of your share of the cost of some of those projects. Randy, are there, we've got the rehab project is top of our list currently. The AWOS, Jim, are y'all, has there been some discussions about kind of...
We're still discussing. About 50% of the pilots want it, 50% don't, so...
We're not sure the FAA really, at this point in time, with their financial moves, whether they're willing to step up to the plate.
Mm-hmm. So that's one that I would see as kind of a... It's floating around a little bit there. Obviously, this obstruction removal issue we talked a little bit about. This is going to be potentially an item of focus, and what that can get you would have a direct connection to the AWOS potentially as well. So some of these projects are going to be somewhat connected, and that's another thing to kind of keep. It's good to have an understanding of is the connectivity between the projects and the order of which some of those happen, we start moving them around. We can kind of get disoriented sometimes as far as things. We want to make sure we do things in the right sequence and spend the money efficiently and effectively. But just to mention that a tree removal project, we're looking at an environmental project, EA potentially, is the first phase of that project. And that's before you ever get an opportunity to go in and remove the trees and work through that process. And sometimes it takes a number of years to get through this. We also have this additional approach work we identified. Potentially, we included it in this phase one period as well. Again, it's connected to what we might be able to accomplish with some of the obstruction. What our capabilities would be in that regard. So a lot of these projects in phase one, in this particular instance, have some relationship to each other. Randy, you have anything else about that?
Not on phase one, but as we move into the second phase, which is the 6 to 10 year period, and then the third phase, which is 11 to 20 year period, those projects are a little less well defined, and we don't try to assign assign specific years to those projects. We're trying to put them into a logical, sequential flow. We'd like them to more or less reflect the order of progress. So if you haven't had a chance yet, if over the coming few days you can give us some thoughts, some feedback, what you see to be more logical flow of progression through those projects, that would
be helpful. I'm going to move to that next question. These were the BEAT projects that we had identified. This is where we got into that south development area. That may be a little bit premature to have that there. It doesn't hurt to have it in phase two because we really don't know, you know, what might come down the road with that as far as requests for those larger type hangars. But a lot of those kind of projects, particularly the hangar projects, are really fluid and they can move independently from one phase to the other pretty easily. Phase two is where we did have that, as Randy had mentioned earlier on, this runway reconstruction is happening in the tail end phase two. That's going to be about 10 years out. And that's about how long we would expect that seal coat work on extend the life of the paving that you have today. So that project that you're doing this year is going to basically buy you 10 years of life of the existing pavement. Potentially have to address this reconstruction later.
So that runway reconstruction is the two ones. I saw you had two things up there, the B1 and the B2. We have to choose one, is that it, or is that for one specific?
On the runway, it's either, essentially. If it's going to be a B2, we're looking at B2 standards this set for 5 years, that may affect that taxi. The runway, reconstruction of the runway is going to be the same from a paving standpoint, a strength standpoint.
Is there an increase in the landing weight for the runway?
We're not planning on it, but it's one of those things you would evaluate it at that time. Make that determination. Again, you've got to have the numbers of those heavier aircraft to make that justification. The strength. We don't see that potentially being needed today, but it's always out there for update. Okay, phase three. This is where we actually had that group two potential standards change happening is in phase three. That's when we would anticipate having enough of those larger aircraft operations to require that to happen. So there's that upgrade. There would be an environmental that has to be able to address that. This is that taxiway relocation, reconstruction, widening taxiway system is part of that. So that, again, that's for an airport the size of Fort Towson, that's a pretty big step you guys to take. And it's not something that you're going to do just because you want to do it, just because you have to do it. The operational activity is supporting that and really requiring that to happen. And again, this becomes a discussion point with the FAA when you start having enough of those operations to meet that justification. You start talking about all the details associated with that. And then we also had the industrial park, different phases. We had those phase three as well. Is that kind of the general consensus that should be in phase three, or is there a field?
Aren't you looking for grant money right now to see if we can move that process a little closer? At least phase one, you know, the first three lots.
So that might be one that you might want to move up, consider moving it up in the project list.
It'll really be dependent on
grant money. Right. And it wouldn't hurt to put it up higher, and then if the money's not there, it just naturally falls down. Yeah, that's kind of up to you guys on how you want to illustrate it, essentially. Okay, I think that may be it. questions in there somewhere, I thought. But that's what we can take now, or any other questions that you have.
So if somebody had a wild idea they wanted to have an ultralight landing thing out there, now would be the time to include this in the master plan, and is there a place to put something like that out there?
An ultralight?
Right. You know, like Arlington, they have a bunch of that out there.
Yeah, we did the planning work there. They've got the glider strip in there. And it's one of those things you've really got to, there's a lot of stuff you got to look at in that. It's probably a little bit late to try to incorporate it into here because this was, it really wasn't an issue that was mm-hmm. in the forefront of the study. But it's something you could look at independently and kind of as a special project, see what come up with might fit. But I don't, I was the planner at Arlington on the last master plan there, and it took us almost 2 years to get that glider runway reapproved and legal what they were doing.
Did the airport have to pay for it itself? Did the FAA help?
Well, it turned out that there really weren't much projects related. It was an existing kind of the infield area between the runway and taxiway. There was a point there where we were going to have to relocate it.
Yeah.
At one point, and they would have had to participate in that.
Are the wind conditions in Arlington different than the wind conditions here? Enough to affect a slow flying plane like that?
You know, I haven't compared the wind roses across, you know, from airport to airport, so I guess I can't.
I know the building codes here require you to build to 80 knots of wind.
So here, a little bit, is that higher than
I don't know what Arlington is, but it's
Arlington is much, much bigger area to work in too.
Yeah, I guess my initial question was, do we have the actual physical space to accommodate something like that, or are we just shot down initially? Because if we ever plan on doing a B2, we wouldn't simply have this physical area to put something like that.
Right.
I think it would be difficult. You'd have to on the south side. But
can you go to that very first existing?
Has there been any demand for that?
Well, that's the other question. We'd have to, is there a demand that's that much longer?
You know,
they can use the existing runway already, and they have. But I really don't have a feel. No study's been done or what the demand is.
Another runway that's not hard surface would be useful for tail directors too.
Yeah, the FAA, we've gone down that road with landing full-size aircraft on the grass strip, FAA.
What about dirt, Ralph? Is that all the same?
Where are you going to put it? Is the big issue.
Well, right along in Arlington, they put it right between the runway and the taxiway.
I know, but we can't with all the safety bumps.
Yeah. What can't have. Yeah, one thing to keep in mind is when you're talking about runways at an airport, there's a minimum, if you're going to do it to standards, there's a minimum separation you have to have between the runways.
Right.
Visual operations is 700 feet. So if you go 700 feet either side of your runway, that kind of gives you an idea where the ground would be available to you.
Remember, this is all straight about here that starts coming uphill.
You're right.
So.
Now, the other thing is some airports will have a paved runway, and right adjacent to it, they'll have a church street. And now there are some, Arlington has a, until we actually had to close it actually to make the glider runway.
Well, they have two runways, the glider runway, and then right next to the runway, they have another kind of grass runway.
They used to. It's technically closed now.
The FAA really is not in grass anymore.
How long a runway does the ultralight normally take? The length?
Well, that less length would probably be all right. Half, if you did half, like the west half, 1,500 feet. As long as you have good clear approaches, the wind currents and things are important for that too.
If we could demonstrate the need, you know, the demand, how would we, you know, say we go ahead and the FAA and we adopt the update, you know, with whatever changes we make, Can we go back in 5 years from now and say, geez, you know, we got this enormous demand for ultralights?
Yeah. I mean, you can look at a special kind of planning assignment for that, go in and get it. You know, Arlington, I don't, we're kind of talking about different things, but they've got, you know, they've got their main north-south runway. They've got a glider strip that actually works into the three infield areas between their main taxi, parallel taxiway. They also have an ultralight strip that's
totally adjacent. Separate.
It's another, entirely a separate runway. And those are two different, if you're talking about ultralights or you're talking about gliders, those are different runways, different types of facilities.
Well, in Alaska, where I was based, the FAA allowed ultralights to use the taxi. They had taxiways on both sides of the airport, and there wasn't really any need for the taxiway on the other side, so they designated that. It could actually be used as a taxiway or the ultralight landing area. The FAA approved
it. I'm sure it would have to approve the demand for them to invest $1 million or more to.
Well, if you're going to build a taxiway along there eventually anyway, you could put in a grass taxiway there, call it a runway for the next 15 years. So.
Yeah, if you're going to put the other hangar facility in there and you're making that parallel taxiway for that, that would make sense, yeah. That would make sense. That would be the time to consider something for ultralights or another runway for another.
Yeah, because that depiction of hangars to the south, that's just kind of a placeholder. It doesn't mean that that's exactly what the layout of those hangars are going to be. So you could modify.
It's definitely phase three.
Yeah.
It's way out.
Phase wish.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing,
really
the
thing we have to do before we even complete phase one is turn it into a profitable operation.
Well, that's the industrial park
aspect. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all,
well,
sounds
like,
real
that's
swell.
That's all feet right there. It could be good action.
There used to be a pilot out there with an ultralight. He used to take off and land. I mean, why, they need a special area? Is that guy still out there anymore?
I noticed one in the hangar.
Unless the traffic density gets so high that it's just unworkable. That's the problem. You get ultralights are flying around at 45, 55 miles an hour, which is like the stall speed for a Mooney is above that.
They would have their own pattern. You would need to have their own traffic pattern, and you need to separate them vertically as well. Again, though, if you don't have 700 feet, then this really has to be treated as one runway. And that's really what we ran into at Arlington and ran into it at Boulder and other areas where there's a lot of glider activity. This just scares the FAA to death. You've got a single runway. It has non-standard separation. You don't have an air traffic control tower. You've got mixes of aircraft's speeds and things. It's just something that you've got to be real careful.
The other thing is right now we have no drainage on the south side of the runway. Everything, it's a shed runway, so it drains to the north and then goes down the ditch system, you know, to the east, you know, to the tension ponds that we've built. And so all that has to be incorporated and takes up space as well. And of course, with hard surfaces like asphalt around the new hangars and everything, that all has to be incorporated. One other thing, Dave, I was thinking, once we get this adopted, maybe you could, at your level with the RPTO and at my level at the Technical Advisory Committee with the Department of Transportation, kind of talk to them about this, that, you know, we've updated our master plan. Here's the projections for usage to try to up the priority of putting the turn lane on Highway 19 into the airport, the traffic light at Prospect, to slow down the traffic. That's going to just get worse and worse as traffic builds in the coming years. You know, it's just, you take your life in your own hand to
the Prospect.
Yeah,
And, you know, they put a traffic light in up where the old U-Haul now, courtesy Ford. And if there was a traffic light down here, that would help break the traffic. Right now, it's just a long, straight shot. It's 50 miles an hour, but, you know, people are hitting 60 miles an hour and trying to come out of that airport road right here across the road.
Right.
So, things.
So, to what extent does the port really control when the airport gets bumped up into the speed 2 category? It seems like it's at the whim of aircraft operators to push the operations up to that class.
Yeah, I mean, the users.
Really is. I mean, that's the truth. And your accounting of that and
I mean, can the airport put a what would that be like a classification restriction?
In reality, it really comes to funding. When you start getting up close to that count, and you may need to demonstrate it next year, and everyone needs to kind of be aware that this is happening, and FAA will be in the loop on that, and they need to start moving some money around and anticipating a fairly large project. So it's not just a one-time occurrence. It's probably something in reality that happens over the years. It's really a foregone conclusion. We're really growing here. We've got all these. You're going to start having those aircraft based at your airport.
So Jim and I are in constant contact with Mary Vargas and Lipa and the other folks over in Renton, Donald, Stein, Brandy's been over there with us. So. And they're pretty good. We got a pretty good relationship with them, constantly talking about this sort of stuff.
But if that trigger gets tripped, then the airport is in the hot seat to share the funding.
Yes, and generally speaking, and there's always some special circumstances that can happen to change that a little bit. I'm never going to say that there's step. Done planning work at Friday Harbor for many years. They went through a similar process over there just recently. They've got caravans over there. They've got a lot of Group 2 aircraft over there. They're small aircraft as well. They basically couldn't some change up here. There was a modification of standards process we went through the other day. Acknowledge some of the operations to be critical and some not. Anything's possible. There were some real problems with you taking that step here, and those kind of things we talked about.
Well, I understood that Friday Harbor had like 100,000 landings and takeoffs a year.
No, they don't now.
You know, I was listening to some of the commissioners from at one of the meetings, and the San Juan Friday Harbor guys were saying that there was like 100,000 landings.
I toured that airport two summers ago and was up there with the was on the executive board for the Public Ports Association. We had a meeting up there. I don't remember it that much, and I've done some improvements to the terminal building and they resurfaced the runway. It's a popular tourist place, so you get a lot of folks flying up there for a day or two.
I think that may just be a... Yeah.
Because like, we're at 58,000 total.
See, I think they're probably closer, they're in that ballpark.
Wow, I'm surprised. I used to work up there and it was a busy airport.
It is. It has. In the past few years, they've had quite a bit of decline. They've suffered from the economy.
The island line.
It was one of those situations where we have all these FAA rules and regs that we've been talking about, but when it gets to reality, sometimes you've got to bend some of those rules just to make things work. Then look at specific aircraft. We wound up moving the taxiway centerline 15 feet or 9 feet and 11 and a half feet. I can't remember what the final number was. Randy, I don't know if you were involved in that with Reinhardt or not. It was quite a process.
I remember it was fluctuating, but I don't remember what number it went.
They've got a pretty active water aeronautical operation, too.
Yes, they got the seaplane base.
Roche Harbor, well, Roche Harbor Airport, but the Friday Harbor has a...
They have an actual seaplane base.
Seaplane base there as well. But I think a lot of the Kenmores and stuff go on the seaplane base.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, they have a Kenmore land base.
Well,
that's all I've got.
Thank you, good briefing.
Thanks for your time and appreciate your comments and look forward to your input. And we'll certainly make these revisions. We've caught several things since we produced this document ourselves.
Well, maybe once we sit down with you, Bill, and get the pilots' comments and suggestions, and we put ours in there, and anything that Randy comes up with, you can probably send us a refreshed draft.
We can.
That I can control the commission.
We can do that. However you can do that.
Okay.
Sometimes we'll track change everything and just kind of see if everything has changed, just electronically. Right.
And then the FAA, they may change something too, so.
Right.
If the commissioners want to reprioritize things, is there a decision tree or what has to come before, you know, A has to come before B, those kinds of items? Dependency chart, I guess.
We don't have that as part of this. The way they're ordered now, they sort of reflect that ordering. If something really, we could certainly would respond to you if you move something. We know it needs to drag three other projects with a certain call.
You know, if the state were to suddenly say, hey, we'll give you some money to help with the tree removal, I'm sure we call you and the FAA up. They'd bounce that up, you know, take the opportunity.
One more thing I'd like to mention just real quickly about that tree removal. Couldn't go into the details today, but in here there's a lot of analysis about some different surfaces, about obstructions within the approach areas. There's a threshold, there's a section on threshold siting criteria, and there's also a section that looks at glide path angles, approaches. And the thing I'd like to point out is FAA Airports Division has their design criteria, and threshold siting criteria is part of that. Flight procedures, they're focused on the TERPS surfaces and clearance requirements for their procedures they develop. Those don't always mesh up very well. There's a little bit of disconnect in some of those surfaces. So what I'm hopeful about is that there's a lot of mitigation opportunities for clearance of obstructions, changing that glide path angle, flight procedure side, to play with that. You know, 3 degrees is the standard glide path angle. Glide path qualification surface for obstructions is 1 degree less than that. And so we've got all these trees in our approach surfaces that we're dealing with. And then we've got threshold siding on the FAA airport side. It's got its own rules and regulations about clearances, things. So we're hopeful that maybe we can play with some of those. And the reason I bring this up, the PAPIs are kind of key to that. And you guys have been adjusting and playing with your PAPIs from a kind of a
horizontal
alignment, basically. That try to narrow that view to the pilots. Did y'all talk to anyone at the FAA at all about that when y'all started about trying to...
John, what was John's last name? I can't remember his name.
Selling in facilities.
Anyways. you know, that's only a temporary fix until we can get those big trees down.
Right.
I really think we can get those big trees down fairly easily since we know the owner and she's a willing participant. She needs firewood.
Right.
The big trees.
But you, what y'all are talking about is this horizontal flare, this
right.
viewing angle of these patterns. We also have an opportunity to play with the slope of those angles. And we can coordinate that. Typically, that's coordinated with the glide path angle on the procedure, approach procedure. We can get those together. We might be able to come over the top of some of those trees and minimize the number of trees that we're dealing with. And that would be good for you guys to work that out. That's beyond the scope of this study that we're doing at the master plan. But I just wanted to bring that up as something. There's going to have to be some coordination and additional work done to make all that happen the way it
is. You know what the traffic lights is right now?
3 degrees.
Last time I came in, it was day. I just thought I'd try to see how it worked. It seemed like it was going to put me touchdown almost halfway down the runway. It was really high.
It was 3.5. We just lowered it when we fly 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah, Bill,
we brought it down to 3, so it's a 3 now. So if you check it now, it's half a degree difference.
If you stay on the path, where do you touch down at?
I don't know. Where did you guys come in at?
Oh.
Stay here at night?
It's, well, you don't have instrument far, so it's a couple hundred feet down from the threshold.
It's not mid-runway anymore, but it was high before.
Was it, so that was just changed
now? Yeah, just 2 Fridays ago.
Try it again.
Bill flew it.
The database that I looked at on the FAA's website, which has kind of official documentation, they were showing it at 3s. And I know that was probably prior to, that publication was prior to. But what do you, is that something that had been changed
yeah.
3.5?
Yeah.
Not that long ago?
Our copies wouldn't adjust to 3. I don't know why the FAA had 3 in there, but now they will.
When trees grow, don't they? You have to keep raising it. The Port of Angeles, yes. they've had to cut down 1,000 feet or more of the runway.
Yeah. Trees. People have parked there.
Isn't the FAA going to fly it again? Don't you coordinate with the FAA?
Yeah, they're supposed to fly in early August, something like that. First week in
August. We'll get the real data then on their flight.
So in 10 years, when this crack seal is worn out and facing renovation of the runway, is there any goodness to be accrued from the ability to maybe annually offset the runway from where it is, or is it optimally positioned now?
I don't know. Realigning it slightly, to my knowledge, I think we can accomplish that.
And all those cost figures are, I think, based on the current footprint. Just grinding up the current asphalt and relaying it. Now, whether it's going to stay a shed or a crown, whatever the FAA is involved. Again, you got all these wetlands not far from the runway, so any shift.
It's not a bad. I know where you're going with this because of the terrain on the 270 in it. But sometimes if you just skew it just a little bit, there may just be a little bit of that hillside that's really.
You start to run into the hills up towards Snagstead.
You have to keep in mind you're turning the other end as well, and usually the problems just change the location.
I've landed in Bear Brook up Dogley.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank kind you of unusual.
Thank you.
Give the time.
Okay. I just want to give you some shots. I came before the commissioners and